Hello, my name is Jerry Cobb. I'm a senior environmental health specialist with Panhandle Health District. I've been working on the Bunker Hill Superfund site since 1983, and today I'm going to try and provide you a quick overview of that project. The Bunker Hill Superfund site actually was created in 1983 when it was listed on the National Priority List. Prior to that listing, however, the Bunker Hill story really began. And it began in 1973 with a fire in the baghouse associated with the smelter. The baghouse is a large building that captured fugitive emissions from the plant and filtered them prior to discharge. There was a fire in the baghouse, resulting in a need for either closing the plant or bypassing. The choice was made to bypass, and somewhere between 7 and 20 years worth of lead particulate passed up that stack in about 18 months' time. The Bunker Hill site is a 21 square mile site. It's 7 miles long and 3 miles wide. It's the second largest Superfund site in the country, and I believe it's probably the largest lead site. The event that occurred in 1973 resulted in air emissions containing between 10 and 12,000 parts per million lead dust in homes and yard soils averaging in the 6 to 8,000 parts range. At present, the Environmental Protection Agency begins being concerned about lead in soils above 400 parts per million in a residential setting. Air emissions right now meet all of the national air quality standards. The project began in 1983, as I stated earlier, but at that time there was very little direction with Superfund. It was a brand new program. There was not a lot of guidance at that time, which in some instances can be good. We were able to do a number of things faster than possibly we would have been able to do it today. The downside of that, however, was there was not a lot of guidance to rely on from other sites and take a cue from what had been done elsewhere. The general consensus of opinion was is it was going to take a long time to clean this site up. It was not going to occur quickly. For that reason, Panhandle Health District expressed a concern to the state of Idaho, who does not have primacy in Superfund. Therefore, they had to work on the project under a cooperative agreement with EPA that public health issues needed to be addressed during the cleanup. It was going to be a long haul, and we knew based on blood lead sampling that had been done back in 73 and 4 and 1975 that there were issues here associated with young children and elevated blood leads. In the 1973-74 period, when emissions were so high, the average blood lead level in the town of Smelterville was 65 micrograms per deciliter. For the entire site, it was 40 micrograms per deciliter. That number has subsequently been reduced to 30, then to 25, and in 1991, the Centers for Disease Control reduced the level of concern to 10 micrograms per deciliter for young children and pregnant women. In Kellogg at this time, and actually for the site at this time, we are looking at an average blood lead level of around 4. National data is hard to compare to a site like this or any site because it is national data and it's collected different than what we do. But for unexposed children, background would be somewhere probably between 2 and 3. So we are now at 4. We've seen blood lead levels drop from that 40 I mentioned earlier to the current level of 4. Our goal at this site is to end with 95% of the children below blood lead 10. That's also the national goal. The program that we recommended, the Solar Valley Lead Health Intervention Program, was funded. In 1985, it began. Since that time, we have been doing very aggressive blood-led screening and follow-up. Each year, we hire 7 to 8 local people. We train them on interviewing techniques. We send them out into the field. They knock on 1,500 doors, roughly, in the site, and offer blood lead screening services to all children 9 months through 9 years of age. Any child found with an elevated blood lead is followed up with a nursing home, with a public health nurse visit to that home, and an environmental audit of that property. As part of that process, we question the family on all sources of lead: soils, dust, paint, hobbies, occupation, recreational activities. It's a very broad-based approach, because with lead or any other environmental sampling event and follow-up, you need to not simply home in on one particular problem, or you're likely to miss other factors that can be causing problems as well. Our program runs each summer through the month of July and August. We do it in the hot, dry time of the year. We knock on approximately 1,500 doors, and we've been screening between 350 and 400 children for the last 10 years. Results, again, we're seeing marked improvements. Those improvements have come from a variety of activities. They include demolition of the smelter. Since 1994, smelter demolition, zinc plant demolition, cadmium plant, phosphate fertilizer plant, all of those demolition projects have essentially eliminated the entire industrial complex, which was approximately 400 acres in size. In addition, we have a 200-acre, 40-foot-high central impoundment area, which contains millions of cubic yards of flotation tailings, a byproduct of the mill. In addition to the central impoundment area and elimination of the smelter complex, there have been over 1.5 million cubic yards of material removed from the Smelterville Flats. The Smelterville Flats, along with the CIA, continued to plague the community as significant dust sources, and that's the reason they had to be eliminated. The material has been taken up to the central impoundment area, where it is now being capped. In fact, as we speak, approximately half of that impoundment area is now under 60 mil plastic liner and is being covered with clean material. The human health risk assessment that was conducted at this site, which is part of the remedial investigation feasibility study process that's required by EPA to address concerns and problems at a Superfund site, was conducted in the late 1980s. In 1989, the human health risk assessment identified yard soils and house dust as the prime concern for young children at this site. That information and that finding was similar to what was found in 74 and 75. However, in the older days, the smelter emissions were included in those concerns and were, of course, oftentimes overshadowed the soil and dust issue. So in 1989, it was decided that in order to reduce exposure to children in their homes, something had to be done. This was a public health response. It was not an engineered type response, a typical remedial action. It was done to locate young children and eliminate those sources in their yard and in their homes. To date, we have remediated approximately 1,800 individual properties, and we've done probably in excess of 10 miles of right-of-way. These are soft-shouldered dirt right-of-ways, which add to the dustiness of a community and of a home. Remediation in those yards includes the removal of up to 12 inches of soil, contaminated soil, the installation of a geofabric as a visual barrier so that one will know where the clean materials that were imported to infill that yard and can possibly contaminated soils begin. The home remediation program is approximately 90% complete. There may be another 250 to 300 and possibly up to 400 yards to be done. They're being done by the upstream mining group as part of their requirements under a consent decree that was negotiated with the state and EPA. They remove contaminated soils from up to 200 yards per year. There's also a concern to address young children's homes or a home where an expectant mother is living. So to complement the yard removal program, there is a high-risk yard removal program such that if you have a child or a pregnant woman in residence, we are able to put that house on a what we call a high-risk list, and that yard will be done each summer during the construction season. So we do not let young children reside on contaminated property while we work somewhere else. We make sure that we get that in our program. All of those issues, including the yard removals, the industrial complex removals, the Smelterville Flats removals, and a very vigorous attempt to get the hillsides revegetated has made a large difference in our blood lead levels, in community-wide yard soil contamination. I've mentioned earlier about yard soils being in the range of 7,000 to 8,000 parts per million in the 70s. Right now we are shooting for and very close to and have reached in some communities a community-wide average of 350 parts per million. Our human health risk assessment predicted that at 350 parts per million for community-wide average and house dust below 500, that our remedial action goal associated with blood lead of 95% below 10 would be reached. One of the things that is unique to this site is that we are using barrier and capping techniques to solve these problems. But it's not your typical remediation where materials are simply removed and disposed of somewhere, and no matter what happens then in the future, the area is clean and people can get on with their lives in a normal manner with regard to excavation and grading community-wide. This community is different. We are using caps and barriers. Contamination in this area is to depth, up to 6 feet. There was not enough money, there was not enough time, and it would have been disruptive to the community to the point where it probably could not have tolerated a 6-foot removal. The decision was made based on human risk activities and the engineering that was done to utilize caps and barriers up to 12 inches thick. However, if you're going to do that type of remediation, if you're going to bring in simple caps and barriers, especially where they are located in 75 to 80%, probably pushing 90% of all of the property in the community, and these are private properties, these are individual homes, commercial properties, public parks, and rights of ways, that there had to be a tremendous effort to deal with excavation and grading on into the future. That was dealt with here. We call that program the Institutional Controls Program. It was developed by Panhandle Health District and is managed by our agency. It is a program that requires all contractors who do excavating and grading in the area to be licensed. It requires permits for all excavation and grading for individuals. And we're talking excavations here greater than 1 cubic yard, which is roughly a pickup pole. We do have a program called Record of Compliance, however, to encourage individuals who are doing smaller projects but may at the same time penetrate that clean barrier to come in and get a record of compliance, and in doing so, we make available to them a trailer, which we will bring to their property and park for them, that will hold up to 1 cubic yard of material. And when it's full, we will pick it up and take it away for them, and we will bring them 1 cubic yard of clean material to infill the excavation that they created. The disposal site that we use is located within the Bunker Hill Superfund site. It's managed by the Institutional Controls Program, and it holds all the residential soils that have been removed to date. It's located at the Page Sewage Treatment Plant. It's up on a tailings impoundment that's about 15 to 20 feet above the floodplain. It covers raw flotation tailings that we're running 6,000 to 7,000 parts lead. The material we're bringing in for the most part is cleaner than that. And at such time that that topsoil is placed, it's graded and seeded, thus eliminating a potential dust source from those flotation tailings that are underneath them. The ICP is a very large program. It's quite invasive. It's been well accepted by the community. It's been in place for approximately 5 years. The program does carry the weight of law. To not comply with the ICP is a misdemeanor. It's a $300 a day fine for each day that the violation is in existence and 6 months in jail. We've not had to exercise the enforcement component. We have managed to, for the past 5 years, deal with it in an educational mode and an assistance mode that is designed to say yes and not no. The success of the ICP is evident in a number of ways. Number one, in yards that are not being recontaminated, and sampling and tracking of those properties has shown that it has been effective. But it also works in the arena of conducting commerce. Silver Mountain, Subway, McDonald's, Motel 8, all have come to this area, located in this area, and conduct business in this area. They have accepted the ICP as an acceptable component of doing business. It has not added a burden to their ability to conduct commerce here. And their compliance is proof positive that not only can we work with these barriers, but we can be successful in doing so.